Okay, this is the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, Monday, January 31st, 2022, special meeting. I now call the meeting to order at 5:59 p.m. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Here.
Director Booth?
Here.
Director Karcher?
Here.
And Director Olson?
Here.
All right, and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I get a motion to approve the agenda? So moved.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda 5.1 through 5.3?
Second.
All right. I'm not going to do discussion on that. All right. Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. And now we're going to move to the communications part of the meeting. And Mr. Ron Patera is going to review some budget revision stuff.
Okay. So the first thing I want to talk about is the beginning fund balance resolution. And basically what this is saying is it's letting especially the public and the board know that to balance the budget that we're going to be using a portion of the beginning fund balance for both the general fund and food service to balance the budget, to use reserves to help cover expenses because based on the conservative approach of underestimating revenues and overestimating expenses, you bite into some of your reserves to show that you have so you can cover all of your expenses. And so that's what this is. And before you got some updated materials, the only thing that changed on this resolution was we increased the amount of the beginning fund balance usage for the general fund, and that was the additional $250,000 for the modular at the high school. For the modular, not only the modular, but also to cover the tools, the startup expenses, basically, for the program over at the high school. The modular can cost anywhere from $130,000 to $160,000, and so and the tools were estimated at about $50,000, and so I bumped it up even just a little bit higher, just in case there are some. This is only the second time we've done it since I've been here in terms of getting modulars. The modulars that we're in now, years ago, these have been sitting here. So, matter of fact, I don't know how many people know that this was once. You know, these were classrooms. Mm-hmm. So I know one time that I was having my car repaired over at Elizabeth Auto that the owner, Eric, brought me back here and says, oh, hey, I went to school in the courtyard where you work. So it was kind of interesting. But since we haven't done modulars before, there were some unanticipated expenses. And I want to make sure that when these unanticipated expenses do come up, we have enough money in the budget to cover that in case we have to come up with a few extra dollars. So that's why you now have also the list of capital items with the updated amount of the $250,000, and that's where that number came from. So,
and Ron, these modulars, we don't own them indefinitely.
No.
Could you just say a little about that arrangement?
Yes, we're renting them. Because we don't know if this is, you know, how everything is going to work out in terms of programs, and are these the facilities that we want them to be permanently housed 5 years, 10 years down the road? Or do we want them to become the brick and mortar of the building, the high school, instead of just being kind of standalone buildings there? That's what these are for, because we might not want them in the future. So let's start off, rent them, and see if they're adequate facilities for the needs for the nursing program, for the automotive program, so on and so forth. And if they're not, plus we can also maybe even use them down the road if we do want to purchase them on a permanent basis. But that is not the plan right now, to purchase them on a permanent basis. We're just seeing if they're going to be the right building for these programs.
And some of the costs are like the electrical, one time. So it's not that it's that cost every year to rent them. These are the initial costs that include some cement work and some getting them here, getting them to our specs and set up.
What's the square footage of one of the units?
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a double wide.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Whatever that means.
Just kind of let you know, we were, some of the unanticipated expenses was, well, we need to make sure we have Wi-Fi in there. So we had to get that installed in there. We did it. We also had to make sure that they've got burglar alarms in there, fire and burglar alarms in there. So there was a lot of electrical work that had to be done. We had to get the alarm company out here to work and get everything alarmed. So there was a lot of things we did not realize were going to be happening. And so we should have enough adequate funds in the budget to cover most all, if not all, the costs. Okay?
So initially, Ron, we're funding this from the general fund,
mm-hmm.
right? And then, how are we paying the general fund back later
with the
Frontier?
Well, the Frontier funds. So when the sale of Frontier finally goes through,
right?
Those proceeds were going into the general fund.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it's not really needing to pay it back or anything like that. It's just we're kind of fronting the startup of this program,
right,
using reserves versus the proceeds.
Gotcha.
And it's not like we're matching those funds. Bless you.
Thank you.
We're not matching the funds to say, okay, we're going to have a certain code for receiving the Frontier proceeds in the general fund. And then we're going to have expenses to match that. We know what our expenses are going to be, and we know we have a fairly good idea of what our revenues are going to be from the proceeds, but it's not like we have to do any
it's
funky
not
accounting
or anything. Okay.
To pay back any funds.
Cool. Okay, so. Yeah.
Any questions on the fund balance resolution? All right, moving on to the actual budget itself, the revised budget. I have a cover memo here for you, and I'm not going to go over everything in here, but there is some pretty decent, pretty sizable changes to this revision for a number of reasons. One, we over-anticipated what our expenses were going to be, so that means we underestimated what our beginning fund balance for the current year that we're in, what we're going to be starting out with, by over $935,000 was extra in the beginning fund balance. We are also increasing the reserves to almost $1.4 million, but this is not including proceeds from the anticipated sale of Frontier. I want to make sure we have I want to make sure it closes because it fell through once before, and I don't anticipate it falling through this time. But there's always that possibility, and so I don't want to put the so-called cart before the horse, and put it into our budget. There was an increase of revenues of almost $1.4 million, and that's through an an increase in the School Finance Act funding. Also, we are anticipating more revenues from the improvement fees from the developers for all the housing. We get a certain amount, a little over $2,800 per new building unit in the district, within the district boundaries. You know, for Gold Creek and Independence, that's where most of these revenues are coming in. Also, Spring Valley is pretty consistent too in terms of the developer fees that we're getting.
New builds.
Yes.
Okay.
New builds. Uh-huh. And it's just residential units. It is not business. It's just residential units, because that's how we are allowed to be able to collect this fee, is because there's a impact on the facilities of that these new students are going to be coming to. So to address that impact, that's why there's these fees that we put in place. Also, we received a couple of additional grants since the beginning of the year. And so those are now reflected in the budget. Those are the air quality grants for more air filtration units in this throughout the district. And also something called, Kristen, CDIP. What does CDIP stand for? Career Development
Incentive Program.
Incentive Program. That we got some money from the state. Not sure exactly. I don't remember what that's being used for. But it's still about $30,000 that we're getting from the state.
Career development, maybe?
It's going to go back.
Probably career development. That would be my assumption.
No,
it's going to go back into, like, automotive, the okay. CNA.
Oh, okay.
It came from the Adobe certifications.
Oh, okay.
That Mr. McClendon talked about.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. Also, when we built the budget this year, we didn't know exactly how much money we were going to be getting from the ESSER 2 and 3 grants from the feds. And so I underestimated the revenues that we would be getting from the ESSERs. And so during our reconciliation of what we received last year and what the total amount of the grant is, it changed what the numbers were for the grant revenues in the general fund. And also, the RISE grant, I didn't realize was going to be, I thought it was just, we were just going to pass through the money that we received for the RISE grant. We were just going to pass it through to the other three entities.
Because there's three school districts.
Albuquerque, Elizabeth.
And Calhoun.
There's only four of us.
Plus, there's reimbursements to CEI.
Oh, yes, yeah. The vendor, or the...
So the grants was I think, $559,000 in change. And so we received a portion of the last year, but I didn't realize that we were going to have to account for all the revenues and expenses on our books. I thought we would just flow them through to these districts once they requested reimbursement, we got the money and sent it to them. I thought we were just going to send it, flow it through like we do with Legacy, so it doesn't really get on our books. They have to record, Legacy has to record the revenues and expenses that we flow through from the School Finance Act. I thought that was the same way we were going to have to do this. But so I didn't have enough revenues in the budget this year for the RISE grant. So that increased our budget, I think, to the tune of $424,000.
So we get that, but that's not ours. That's going to other schools.
No, right. Some of it is ours.
Okay.
Some of our expenses that we incur stays here. But if Big Sandy, I think Big Sandy requested something like $80,000 or $90,000. I know I'm just talking off the top of my head. I'm just using ballpark numbers. And they gave us their invoices, they made a request, and then we made a request to the state, and the state sent us the money, then we floated through to them, but we have to record it on our books.
Okay.
So that's another reason why our revenues increased somewhat significantly. Before I move on to the expenses, I'd kind of like to take a bit of bit of a minute or so to talk about a mid-year supplemental budget at the Colorado Legislature. There is right now, I don't know the status of it. Maybe Douglas, you have an up-to-the-minute update.
Let me look and see if I hadn't as of like 4 this afternoon.
So we received an email last Thursday that the legislature is considering buying down the, it used to be called the negative factor, now it's the budget stabilization factor, some, I think, $69 or $70 million, buy that down, and also, I guess, for lack of a better term, supplement or backfill the amount of money that districts would have received had there been a good count on at-risk students. Problem there with the at-risk students, that the way CDE defines it, the state defines it, is it's based on your free and reduced lunch count. Now, there's really not a whole lot of incentive to fill out those free and reduced applications because everybody's eating for free. And so with that loss of an incentive, we're undercounting the free and reduced. And to make up for that undercount, they've set aside some one-time funding for school districts that they believe is under-reporting at-risk students. And it's not just us that they're giving this, that's getting this money, but our amount, our portion of it is $74,000 and change. That's for the at-risk students. The buy-down of the negative factor, the BS factor, the budget stabilization factor, is $371,000. So that's really significant. It's neither one of those is reflected in here because it's already going to be confusing enough with the slight changes that we made, and so I didn't want to further confuse it, and it's not a done deal either. It's still supposed to be what we received, or what the information we received is supposed to be voted on today, but that still then has to be signed by the governor's office too, even if it's, even if both the House and the Senate legislation looks the same, it still has to go to the governor's desk to get signed.
Been told how long they're going to be covering lunches, by the way?
No, they have not.
Okay.
We know that it's through the end of the school year.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So, but it's not necessarily indefinitely, because this is all part of COVID.
Well, that's the way it started out as,
yeah,
but
right.
Who knows? There has been discussion.
What we do know is it's through the end of the school year.
Yeah.
Okay.
But after
I
was just curious. Really, your guess is maybe as good as ours.
And unfortunately, we don't find this stuff out a lot of the time until sometimes almost after the start of the school year. And so that's one of the things, that's one of the dangers, is you're preparing for the upcoming school year, but you don't know exactly what all the rules are going to be when you start. And the feds are really behind in their payments for reimbursing school districts for the lunches, too. So Not that it's going to cause us any problems, but they're behind. The feds are very, very far behind in terms of getting the dollars. Well, I'm sure you've even heard about some people are still getting their refund checks from last year's federal taxes.
Yep.
So, that's
they're quick to want their money.
So I don't. Is there anything else, Douglas, that you think that cover in terms
well,
of that?
It's true, and I forget it, and sometimes it's easy to forget that of the 371, a portion of that, about 20%, needs to flow through to Legacy, so our portion is approximately 300,000.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, I forgot about that. It's 371 for the district, 20% goes to Legacy. Same with the 74,000. 20% of that 74,000 is going to flow through the Legacy. Let's see. I think I covered all of the revenues here. Something else. Let's see. I don't have it on my cover memo. So one of the things is when I was talking about food service, and that we're getting reimbursed. Everybody's eating free, and so we're getting reimbursed on a per meal basis for all the lunches that we're serving. But the amount of money that we received from the federal government on a per meal basis is actually more than what we charge. And so, because of that, our ending fund balance was significantly higher in food service than we anticipated. And because it was so much higher than what we anticipated it was going to be, I eliminated for this year alone, just maybe we'll see where we're at here in a few months, but for this year, I eliminated the $100,000 transfer from the general fund to the food service fund. Because in years past, we've had to subsidize the operation of the food service fund. And so this year, because of the large beginning fund balance, it's not going to, you know, just eliminate it.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question about
sure.
that? Based off of that, would it be feasible to up our game in the food division because we're getting more?
And what do you mean by upping our game?
Better food?
A little bit better quality.
So, that brings up a really interesting point. Because we are having... I know everybody's tired of hearing about it, but it's true. We're having horrible supply chain issues.
Oh, I'm sure.
And we're having... We don't do it all the time, but there are sometimes we have more packaged foods than we normally would have. In terms of trying to up our game and improve the either more quantity or better
quality
taste, quality, it's kind of dependent on what we get.
Okay.
And that's the problem. We are changing our menus a lot because of that. And also, we're having problems with full staffing. It's not unusual to have, we only have two office staff. One's the director and one's the person who's in charge of the office over there at food service in the kitchens every day. So, we're doing our best in terms of trying to do what we can in terms of making sure everybody eats and there's somebody there to make sure everybody gets a lunch if they want one.
Right.
So, that would be nice to do, but in
right.
terms of, and the problem is also, we're having to pay a lot more for the food this year, too. I was really surprised when I did the mid-year review of our food service and how much more we're paying this year as compared to last year. And so, but even with increased fund balance. So
the ribeyes at the elementary school went up quite a bit.
No.
Jeez, Dennis.
Yeah. Okay. And so we eliminated that. We eliminated $100,000 transfer, but we increased the transfer from the general fund to the pupil activity fund, which is the extracurricular activities, which is sports, drama, band, stuff like that, too. So we had to increase that because, well, costs are going up there. Referees, and well, when we have referees and that, we're having to pay more. And I think we also added a sport at the middle school, softball or something like that. I forget.
I know
we did. But excuse me. So, are there any questions in regards to my memo? You have, because like I said, I don't want to read verbatim the cover memo.
I don't have any questions.
So these are just the dates.
So what I was going to get to that next.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. No. I was going to get to that. I just wanted to make sure there's no other questions concerning the budget revision.
No.
Because that's for the upcoming budget year.
Okay.
That's going to be the handout is for it's the budget proposed budget calendar for the 22-23 school year / fiscal year. And this is just to kind of give you an idea. These aren't set in stone, but just to kind of give you an idea what's going to be coming up here and what's going to be going on. And then also on the second page of the handout are the goals. I've already kind of moved on because I didn't sense any other questions on the budget revision. And so these are the current budget goals for this year, but I wanted you to see what the current budget goals are for the year that we're in, and that was kind of the guiding when we're building for this budget year that we're in now. And these have actually been the same budget goals for a couple of years now because, well, they're good. I think, well, I should say they're good. They cover a lot of our values, or they cover our values here in the district, I believe. I think they do a good job of covering our values, but there's no harm in, if they need to be tweaked, we can tweak them and make changes based on, you know, changes that are happening now in the district.
Would you consider the budget process a backpack budget process, where we're looking at individual kids first, or how would you describe our
I know what you're saying, the backpack, you know, the following kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would necessarily describe it that way. I haven't really thought of it, but I know what you're saying. I've heard the term before, but in my estimation, I don't know if that's a good way to describe this budget and the budget process. I don't know how much different our budget process would be if we looked at somebody else who claims that they're a backpack, that they follow the kids. I'd like to think that we always try and provide enough funding for each school to address all the needs, all the variety of needs at all the schools. But I'm not necessarily in the way that you see it described in literature that it's a backpack type of budget. So
I think in a way this describes something similar to that. I mean, if you read through the goals, you know, aligning resources for continued improvement in student success and improvements in organizational effectiveness, all of those things kind of circle back, I think, to the student. I mean, that's why we're here, right?
Right.
So, every single one of these bullet points circles back to the student.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The reason I ask, I watched Aurora balloon in administration, and then they started budgeting with administration in mind, and they lost track of the kids. And then in about 1990, facing a strike because it was so lopsided on one side. And so that's when I first started hearing about that term, so that's been a couple days ago. But it made sense back then that we look at the kids and the needs and build from there.
Right. And I meet with the schools, and they let me know what their needs are in terms of if we do need to increase supplies and purchase service at a specific school, we can do that. We have the flexibility. We've got four schools now, and so we have a lot more of the flexibility. We don't use hard and fast formulas to fund schools. Whatever the needs are at that school or the anticipated upcoming needs, we try and address those. When I meet with the schools, I meet with the principals and the office staff, the office manager, to make sure that we try and address everything that is anticipated, that is coming up in the new year, and some of the changes in terms of more enrollment, or we have some more special needs kids, whatever, are going to be coming in. Going to be getting in from preschool or kindergarten and start going up through the ranks, and how do we address their needs in that? So, but it's just, it's kind of up to the principals and the office staff to let me know what are the needs of the schools there in terms of how much funding we need. So So if we need to, if we're going to have it, if we're going to be rolling out a new curriculum, where we need to make sure we have enough money set aside to address that. And so, I don't know if that answers your question or not, Craig.
Well, and I didn't want to pigeonhole anything, because I'm sure everybody is a hybrid of some sort of approach. But just hoping, and like I say, I think we have been looking at the needs of the students to build the budget. And so I think you did answer that.
Okay. All right.
Do we have any kind of numbers as far as when you're talking about inflation for student capacity? The numbers of all these new houses coming in and stuff, what have we seen from that? And are we at capacity, I guess, in some of our schools? And is that going to be an issue with some more of these houses being built?
No, we're not at capacity. And in the near future, we aren't. We don't have an issue. We do have an issue, which is when we started the meeting, with programs at the high school. So, you know, and the high school is probably the one school where if you were to go around and look at the use of all the classrooms, that every classroom is being used. But if you go to the other schools, you will see classrooms that are used for non-classroom purposes. They once were classrooms, they've been repurposed. Some of them, science storage. Others for like reading instruction, small group reading instruction. But the high school, the challenge with high school especially is when you start to fully maximize the facility, what you're doing is essentially taking away the teacher's space for planning. So the teacher's office, materials, their desk is in the classroom. That classroom isn't being used when they're planning. So to fully maximize the use of the space, you end up telling the teacher, you can't do your planning there. You've got to go to some central location or some other place. And that makes the teacher's work harder. So all the classrooms are allocated to a teacher, but they aren't being used there for three, on average, three of the four classes per day. They've got students in them, but for one class period per day. So how much we start to use classrooms as the school grows and essentially kick the teacher out and say, you have to go plan somewhere else, is, you know, that's probably in our future at some point. But how soon that is and how far we want to go with that, there's a couple of important trade-offs.
When we built the high school, the initial size and things we put into it was good for 1,100 kids, and then the pods can be added on to accommodate more. Now, the CNA offices, that's ruining our tennis court area on our long-term scope. So, you know, if tennis ever makes a huge comeback, we're going to have to do something.
Just to kind of give you an idea, when I started here, that the enrollment at the middle school, the high was 634 students, I believe, 632 students. Now we've got about 440. At Runny Creek, all their K through or first grade through fifth grade. Had four classes per grade level. Mm-hmm. Now they're at each one of them. I don't think any of them is at four, and they're all at either two or three.
Two or three. Yeah.
And so the high school at one point was at 860 kids. It's now at 660 kids.
I thought I had heard the middle school was at capacity. Is I guess why I was asking. No,
the way that Ron's describing it is a good way. We've talked to the community about that. It's in a like, for example, I'll be asked to go and give comments on new developments, and I don't comment on the development, you know, much green space or building codes or whatever, but the question of how does growth impact the district and the question of capacity. And I think
that's a good rough that we've
had significantly more students in all of our schools. I don't know that we could fit 1,100. I think it was pretty packed at 800. So when we've asked cooperative strategies to define the capacity of our schools, they've given us kind of two answers. One is they look at policy and they say, what's your student-teacher ratio? And they calculate it by that. And then the other is they look at essentially square footage and they do it based on that. But they kind of have this caveat that it really depends on your educational kind of your educational goals and your educational approach. So we believe that our schools can hold 800 at the high school, at least because we knew it did at one point.
Right.
And we can go through all of our schools and say there is excess capacity at each of the schools.
And the way Douglas described about how, okay, you get three classes are taught in this one classroom, then the fourth period is a planning period. And to get the 860 kids in, that teacher gave up their planning period so that classroom could be used for instruction.
Right.
So that's how that was done in the past. And, there was some musical chairs.
Right.
I mean...
But it was okay.
Yeah.
Because then,
And we have...
Each pod has a nice office area, and so it's not a huge ordeal to just walk to the end of the hall.
We contracted Cooperative Strategies along with two other firms in 2018 to do a facilities master plan. They are updating, Cooperative Strategies is updating the enrollment projection piece, population growth. We just got sent today a draft. I don't know if you've looked at it yet.
I scanned it.
Good, that's why you're in a good mood. I didn't scan it. It was like, I think that they're like lawyers.
Yeah, that's part of it, unfortunately. So. Yeah.
Well, and to extend that, it's not to just take a cheap shot at lawyers, that they get paid by the word. These people, I think, feel like they're getting paid by the number. And so the numbers are just kind of like more numbers and more charts and more graphs. And it's like, I don't know. It's hard to see your way through it all. But it's in draft form. We should be able to share it with the board and the rest of the school community probably within a month or so.
Yeah. When we went through it initially, I was their information on how the demographics of families have changed, and they're having kids later and fewer, and that was eye-opening, I think, to most of us that were at that last meeting with them.
Well, and a lot of people think of, two kids per household, but existing households don't have two school-age kids per household. So, and they can get those numbers and then they can project those numbers. And the current one, it sounds funny, but, it's 0.25 per household. So for every four houses, there's one school-age kid. You start to add up all that. And there's no way of knowing whether that child is going to go to school in Elizabeth or Douglas County or Kiowa or... be homeschooled or whatever. So
it's funny you bring up the 0.25 because that's, I don't know if we had just recently looked at that number, but that comes to mind because I was looking for that number today in the draft, and that number changed slightly. Depending on the development, it's either 0.24 students per house, new house, or 0.26 students per new house.
and I don't know.
Depending on the development.
I think that the level of decision is, they have their formula, they're a national company, they've been doing this, and they have their approach. I think that that level of precision belies a level of... it doesn't... It may try to convey a level of precision, but I think it's... It's like economics.
Right.
What's inflation going to be next month? They don't
right.
know.
Yeah.
But somebody's saying. Probably got a model that's figured it out, and somebody else a different one. Mm-hmm. But I think that our hope is that that report will be useful for the board and for the community, and you know, give us some more grounding for thinking about the future.
So one of the things I do here in the next month and a half, 2 months, is I start contacting the school's registrars to get what their current numbers are. Because that's the numbers I use to help build what I anticipated enrollment for each one of the schools in each one of the grade levels. And it's nothing sophisticated by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just moving first graders to second graders to third grade, so on and so forth. And I use those numbers either mid-March, early April, or yeah, mid-March, early April, to try and extrapolate what the enrollment's going to be for each grade next year. And I use that to help build the budget in terms of the revenues. And so I just recently contacted the two registrars at the two elementary schools to see what their numbers are after Christmas break, because usually there's some movement in schools after, you know, over Christmas break. And so I just wanted to kind of get a ballpark if there's been some significant increases at either one of the schools. And I was somewhat surprised that Running Creek doesn't have a larger increase in the number of students after the Christmas break, because last year they had a fairly significant increase in the number of students. And I drove through the Gold Creek development this week, and I couldn't believe how many houses have gone up since the last time I've gone through there. And I was surprised that there weren't more students. And so I'm just wondering if, having children later in life than some other, you know, generations did, if that's not having any impact on the number of new students that are coming to the elementary schools. Because even Singing Hills, a lot more homes are going up in Independence. And they didn't have a significant increase in numbers either. There was an increase, but not what I would consider significant.
Based on the activity of the
previous years.
Yeah.
Or previous year.
Yeah.
So, but that doesn't mean that there couldn't be more students between now and, you know, mid-March, end of March, and that. So, anecdotal evidence of kind of what we might anticipate.
Just need to start having more kids.
Yeah. Really quickly.
Got grandkids.
Really quickly, unless there's any questions that you have in terms of budget goals, the calendar, the budget revision, I just really want to quickly explain, and I can go into further detail down the road once you start looking at these different budgets. But several years ago, the state legislature said we not only had to have a regular budget that we had to create, that we, you know, you're supposed to create it so a layperson can look at it and kind of get a decent understanding of what goes into the nuts and bolts of it, but then there's also another budget based on what CDE, Colorado Department of Education, tells us we have to create, and it's based on what's called a what they call a uniform budget summary. And this one, you have to break it down by what's called program codes in your account, your account string of 27 characters. And each and there's a count system that everybody, all school districts in the state has to follow. And so that's why they wanted us to create this uniform budget summary. And I could go into some of the my opinion of why it was created, but I'll do that at another time when the recording is turned off. But we have to do both budgets, and it is incredibly labor-intensive to do both budgets. And And
same information, just presented differently.
Your bottom line is going to be the same.
How long did you get the extra one?
The extra one's probably 7-8 years, something like that. Yeah. The revenues are the same, but they're just entered differently. They have different titles.
And it's just not as useful as an oversight tool or management tool, which is why we produce it, we give it to them, because they want it in that format. But the format that you get is useful and has been in the past for boards, and is useful for finance staff and all the other people who have to look at it, because it gives us the information that we need to manage the finances. But that one, it's not a good operating tool.
Yeah, the regular budget that we put together is based on what location. Each school has its own budget breakdown. You can see what, you know, each school stands alone. The transportation department stands alone. Superintendent's office stands alone. Finance office stands alone. Technology, SPED. Even though some SPED teachers and staff who work in the buildings, their salaries are recorded in that building site. So, and this to me is that was pointed out, it's a much more useful tool, especially for myself. For you too.
Well, it's more mobile. The CDE one is the one you went over with me.
Yeah, it's not broken out by school. It's broken out by...
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's more difficult to understand.
I think they're trying to be transparent, but it doesn't feel that way. It doesn't, because it obscures more than it reveals. And the way that the current one, you can zero in and dial down pretty easily. And you don't... It's pretty self-evident.
Looks like a budget in the private industry, private world.
So, I'm done.
All right.
Oh, and at the next meeting, I'd like to, not necessarily next one, but I am going to ask at the next one if you have any changes for the budget goals. I mean, it can be modified. I'll ask the question in the next meeting and the following meeting too. If you have any. Want to add another goal, you want to wordsmith the current goal, so
cool.
Please, or you can email me.
Right, and if you want to understand how the school budget works more, feel free to call up Ron, but also to meet with him, because I think, you can talk about how long it took you to kind of understand both the inflows and the outflows, and
Yeah, and I think that's more timing is on all of the issues of revenues and expenses, and you know, when is this paid, when do we get this revenue in, and you've kind of, you talk about that as you go through, you know, in our board meetings, but it's good to sit down because I understood it much better after you and I met.
Yeah, so if you feel that need, feel free, but if not, no need to.
You've already done it, right? Yeah.
It's very helpful.
All right. Well, then we're going to move on to action items. And can I get a motion to approve 7.1 2021-2022 budget revisions?
So moved.
Second.
All right. Any discussion?
Second.
Any discussion?
I would just like to say thank you for holding the special meeting tonight to do this. Means a lot to me, and I know to the finance department. They really want to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's crossed, and that just takes time. And we didn't want to rush it, and so thank you for giving up on part of the evening to do this.
Okay.
I have been working on this since the beginning of December, this budget, but then all heck broke loose a few weeks before, or about a week and a half before the date was coming up, and there was still more to put together of this. And so I think Thank you, yes.
Well, and I appreciate not rushing through it, as I'm sure everybody does. You don't want to rush through an entire district budget and half it. You know, you
right, make it part of the regular meeting because you don't focus the attention. Yeah, that's good. All right, roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. Can I get a motion to approve 7.2, the fund balance resolution?
So moved. Second.
All right. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Blackham?
Aye.
Director Booth?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Director Olson?
Aye.
All right. So with that, I will adjourn the meeting. And look at this. It's 6:50, which is exactly the time on our agenda.
Well,
I hereby adjourn.
Well done.